I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views from Absinthe to Zinfandel, Alder, Budweiser.
Hello and welcome to another episode of It's the Drink Talking. I'm Sam Capon, otherwise known as the Mistress of Wine, and I'm joined by the delicious, the thinking drinkers, Tom Sandon.
Hello.
And Ben McFarlane.
Hello, Sam. You all right?
I'm very, very well. You two chaps in fine fettle?
We are. We're good.
So moving on, I am doing this week's spit and swallow.
Good.
So mine is, I have a problem with people who appear to make things that are really, really expensive just for the sake of it and just so they can clearly PR it. So I don't know if you heard about the place in Adelaide who was making $100 donuts.
No. $100.
This actually is slightly hilarious. This is a throwback to Valentine's, and a place in Australia was creating 100 limited edition luxury donuts, which were available in Adelaide. So it's $100 per donut. You could get 6 donuts for $500, and you could get a dozen for $1,000 Australian.
What's in these donuts?
I was about to just say, what makes them so expensive, you may well ask.
Gold.
Gold. So basically, the donut was covered in 24 karat gold leaf.
Really?
And infused with crystal champagne.
You can't eat gold, though. Can
yes,
you?
You can.
Really?
Yeah. I put gold leaf in a Prosecco jelly for New Year's Eve.
You got what?
I put edible gold leaf in a Prosecco and elderflower jelly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you can't put it in food. Did everyone die?
No, well, no, I don't think so. But the best bit, which you could then be serenaded with a song about gold while you waited for your donut. Wow. So then, for example, have we got any examples?
Gold!
Yeah, okay.
Always believe in
you. Or Gold Digger by Kanye West.
Yeah.
Or even Gold Dust Woman by Fleetwood Mac.
Going for gold.
So would you ever spend $100 on a gold leaf donut with Cristal champagne?
No, I think I don't know whether Cristal champagne is any good or not.
Just buy a bottle of that.
Yeah,
buy
a whole bottle of it.
Is it $100 Australian?
It's $100 Australian.
What is that, like 5p?
Let's have a look at the exchange rate.
What's their currency?
Yeah, I don't know.
One second, I can tell you.
I mean, anything coming from Australia where dingoes steal babies, I find it difficult. A donut?
Yeah.
This was done a year or so ago, identical thing, in New York. They also did a golden crystal donut, which was exactly the same, covered in gold leaf. And
so they've stolen the idea, is that what you're saying?
Is it a donut with a hole in the middle?
Well.
Or is it a full donut?
Didn't have that information.
Mm.
But I think a donut generally... Yeah, I don't know, actually.
Because if it was Valentine's Day and it had a hole in it, you could present it as a lady.
There's only one way to present that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That then might be worth the money for the comedy factor. Oh, that's not too bad. Okay, so $100 Australian dollars is 56 quid.
Okay.
It's for a donor.
Yeah.
Okay. That seems a little bit more usable. However, the one in America, which I think was in 2016, you could buy them by the dozen for $1,200 US dollars.
Well, I mean, I just think that if you're going to buy a donut with gold in and filled with champagne.
You got more money than sense?
Well.
No taste?
Yeah.
And I'll no taste.
No taste.
So do one.
But people always seem to. It's really vulgar. And people keep wanting to do this. Like,
it's just disgusting.
Making the world's most expensive cocktail or the world's most expensive burger. You know, just to try and get some press out of it and get attention on their
restaurant.
Yeah,
well, that's why they're doing it. And it's worked because we've covered it on this. So you've kind of
played into their hands. Does the Cristal maintain its bubbles, effervescence within the donut?
You wouldn't have thought so, would you?
No. And you couldn't put it in the donut without it. I mean, it's not like you bite into it and it'd be all liquid. It would just be...
It probably seeps into the sponge.
Yeah. So it'd just be a soggy donut.
Very cheap treat, isn't it, a donut? I can't find it weird. You know, if you're going to do like a creme brulee or something that's got a bit of gravitas, then it'd be fine.
Or,
but it's just a donut.
I know.
Doing a
like
bloody
or truffle or something like
croissant.
That.
I mean, I'd just pick those up just willy nilly.
Basically, in this country, I reckon you could get a bottle of Cristal champagne for roughly £120. So it's like for £56, you're getting a donut with some Cristal in.
Mm.
And gold leaf's not that expensive. Mm. Just buy a nice bottle of fizz.
Why do I think that Cristal is naff? Is it just because people who don't know about champagne refer to it? It's a bit bling, isn't it?
It's a bit bling. I think if you go to anywhere like sort of, you know, those places like Nikki Beach and Saint-Tropez, and people pay
Cristal?
Loads of money, and it tends to be Cristal because it's one of the most expensive. And so it is often used in ostentatious displays of wealth. So I don't know if you've ever been to one of those places, and these girls all come out
all the time.
Carrying a bottle, and they have like sparklers in the top.
Yeah, I've seen
and
that.
They play special music so everyone can turn and watch these
music.
Girls serenade, you know, coming in with this fizz, so taken to the table. So basically everyone knows that this person's got tons of cash. It is a total moron.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes, well, I just, my spit is indisputably twats with too much cash who buy stupid things like gold leaf donuts infused with very expensive champagne that basically is just saying, I've got more money than sense.
I like
do
it.
Do one.
Yeah, spit that.
Or it just says, I really like donuts.
I mean, I wouldn't spit it out if it tasted
Go to Krispy Kreme. They're delicious.
I don't like them. No,
we had a discussion
no.
about this. They had a massive Krispy Kreme at the airport in Mexico. This has already come up again. And we had a big discussion about this. They are just ridiculously sweet.
You can't beat just a classic jam donut.
Jam donut, that's what
Sprinkly
we were talking about.
Oh, I had one the other day, a tiny little one from Eat or something like that, from a chain. But they had these little tiny ones.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I'll buy one for Wilf. And of course, it didn't like them, so I had to eat both of them. But they were absolutely delicious. Yeah. So I've got my swallow.
Go on.
The Co-op is extending its vegan wine range.
Oh, God. The bloody vegans. I'm sorry if you're a vegan listener.
Well, I think it's good to embrace what is a very clear growing trend, which is vegetarianism and veganism, and to offer consumers more choice in that regard.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know. Do you know why wines wouldn't be appropriate for...
Yeah, findings. Findings.
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah. Yeah,
so they use little fish bladder stuff.
Isinglass.
Yeah, isinglass to make the wine clear?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Filter. They use it in beer, don't they?
So. Oh, right. So basically you get colloids and sort of material in wine, obviously beer as well by sounds of it, and to make the wine clear and stable, and all wines, I'd say, get fined. So even really expensive wines get fined. And certainly in Bordeaux, they fine with egg white.
Okay.
And, you know, goes through the wines and...
It's not vegan.
Not vegan. And fish bladder, sturgeon bladder, isinglass is used. And another common one is bentonite, which is a type of clay. So vegan wines just won't be fined with egg white or
isinglass. So they use the clay stuff. Maybe there's little animals that live in the clay.
Yeah.
And the clay,
good
they
point,
live, take their house away.
There's certainly got to be some bacteria.
No.
It's not very porous. Is it? That's quite interesting, actually. Clay. Yeah. How does it work?
I'm not entirely sure. I think bentonite is also normally used for white wines, and it can be used for fining and it's used for filtration. But you've got those are different sorts of filtration, like
right.
Crossflow.
Right.
And...
Now, do we think that someone like Co-op doing this, this vegan trend, I think it's actually not a fad. I think more and more people are becoming worried about eating as much meat as they are and just the whole food chain and stuff.
And health.
So I think, although we mock it, I do think more and more people are looking at it. I forgot to say, I would struggle with a vegan diet.
I would.
But I would think it would be really good for me to do it.
Any kind of diet, isn't it? Really. I don't know. With my spawn, my offspring, I would need them to be eating meat. Mm. I think protein in their diet, and that's always... going to be my challenge with this approach to...
Well, there's so many different parts. So you've got red meat, you've got white meat. Fish is obviously a massive source of protein.
Yeah.
And also that's vegetarian, but I mean, you can't be vegetarian if you eat fish.
Pescatarian, isn't it?
Pescatarian. But I just think increasingly people are really looking into how to add more, you know, fruit and vegetables into their diets. And if you take something away, like meat or fish, you're more likely to add more in.
Yeah.
But also if you are vegan or vegetarian... then, you know, it's really good to have more wines catered, you know, for that. Yeah. And also increasingly, I think people who are health conscious might then be more interested in organic and biodynamic wines as well.
Right.
So, and, you know, this whole trend setting that we've talked about before, like the whole natural wine thing and no sulfur, low sulfur, all that kind of stuff. So people are increasingly interested in what they put in their body. My husband was saying he read the other day about some study that said household cleaning agents are worse for you than smoking.
Really?
And just increasingly being aware...
You
wouldn't want to drink your Mr. Muscle.
It doesn't give you
muscles. It doesn't give you muscles. So I think there's just an increasing awareness. Like, I've now changed all my, you know, laundry stuff to organic.
That's what it does, isn't it? You know, it shines a light on the wider production of it.
You can make, you know, those...
I'm trying to eat a lot more organic food. So I'm much less bothered about
meat. People are making their own deodorants, aren't they?
Just bought aluminium-free deodorant.
Right.
It's not as effective. Unfortunately, so we'll see how that goes down. That's what
I was going to say. Something.
This place
I've had my normal BA batch on this morning, but I literally finished it this morning.
Really,
it's a tricky one between not putting aluminium in your pits versus honking.
Well, it's just a wider love now.
I mean,
I know I'm old married woman, doesn't really matter.
Mm.
So, I am just looking at more areas in my life where I can make some changes. And if I do eat meat, I do try to buy it locally and from our local biodynamic farm.
Mm. It's good, and for that reason, you're sort of shining a light on it.
But at the same time, if you're a single mum with kids on the breadline, a £5 chicken that will feed your kids for a couple of days is one of the best ways of doing so.
Yeah, right.
And it's all very well the sort of middle class is saying, oh, you shouldn't be eating that
chicken. But how much more is it for free range?
What I'm saying is the welfare of humans overrides those of chickens, in my opinion.
Well, not in your opinion. I mean, the history of evolution... Unfortunately,
we
dictate.
Yeah, yeah. Humans won, chickens zero.
We do win.
And unless, of course, you're KFC, in which case the chickens are winning.
Well, KFC, they really got that badly wrong.
They have. Yeah. Excellent. So they're my two fascinating spits and swallows. And
well done.
Which means we are now on to the tasting. Who is doing the tasting this week?
It's me.
Okay, Ben, over to you.
Cheers.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is It's the Drink Talking.
Okay, so this week, I'm going to level with you. I was struggling for a theme here because I was going to do St. David's Day beers. So beers from Wales. Wales has got an amazing brewing scene at the moment. But the place I went to, the Real Ale Company in Little Venice, which is a great little shop, only had one Welsh beer, Tiny Rebel, which is a great beer. And the only other Welsh-themed beer I could think of was a can with a sheep on it. And I thought, that is lazy national stereotyping. So out of necessity, I scrapped that idea. And then I saw some beers with labels with ladies on them. Mm. And it reminded me that at the moment, you might not be aware of this, but there is a concerted campaign within the beer industry, mainly driven by female commentators, but also it's getting backing from elsewhere as well, to stop the daft sort of packaging of beers that is sexist. So pictures of scantily clad ladies on pump clips and
beers. Which is obviously meant to appeal to men.
Yes, exactly.
Strange that, like, that is, though, isn't it?
What?
I mean, I'm rarely aroused by the cartoon
picture of a lady
on a beer
But I
pump.
Think it is.
And, I presume it makes a brand look a bit shit.
Like, that's my first reaction.
It feels quite down market.
Yeah.
A bit desperate. Not
well, it's not very in
marketing tune.
If you look at, I think, probably 10, 15 years ago, that was kind of seen
the
as...
The laddish culture.
Yeah, but also a bit risque, a bit sort of cutting edge. I mean, just in the fridges of this beer shop I was in yesterday, and some of the designs are amazing, especially on the cans. You've got the 360-degree design, so they can do really cool stuff with it. So they've taken a sort of lead from the spirits world, or the world of spirits, not the afterlife, and are doing, you know, remaking their packaging look much better. So it's outdated and it's just unnecessary as well. I think it's offensive to women. I also think it's offensive to men, this idea that we'll only buy a beer because we've got a pair of knockers on.
What I mean, there's plenty of other places I can go to find people.
Yeah, exactly. Have you
been on my phone?
On the internet. So rather than just saying, oh, this is out of order, there is a campaign to ban beers from entering beer competitions that do still do these and innuendo-laden names. So I did think, well, why not taste some beers whose labels have pictures of ladies but are very tasteful? Yes,
so
just
no
show
boobs,
you that you can have...
Birds on the can.
You can have chicks. You can have chicks on the can. And they're just ladies, being ladies living their own lives.
Strong women.
Strong women and... They're both good. Well, actually, I don't know whether the second one's a good beer because I've never had it. But the first beer I'm very well acquainted with. So empty your glasses, ladies and gentlemen, because this is from the Germans. It's Rothausbrau. The name of the beer is Tannenzapfler.
Right. And it has a lady on the front who is an illustration and looks like a lot of series of angles and lights. It's a bit like a Picasso cubist.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's a lady, a blonde lady, but she's got a kind of, one of those, how would you describe that?
Well,
she's got a headscarf on.
She looks medieval.
Sort of medieval. Yeah, she looks like
it's
something
like
out
a bit,
of a...
like an old-fashioned...
Rapunzel.
Like a lady from a medieval court when you get those headpieces
exactly.
and the little veils.
Given the German link, you'd imagine she could be a Fraulein with a... With sort of a busty...
Well, I was about to say about...
Busty Dirndl, but she's not even doing that. Her
décolletage.
Décolletage is covered.
She is double-fisting.
She is double-fisting, though. She's got a pint in both hands. And she's got rosy cheeks.
And she's surrounded
on her face.
She's surrounded by hanging turds.
No, it's a pine cones.
The beer is called...
Dangleberries. Tannenzapfler means little pine cones.
So I guess what I'd question is the relevance on having her on the label.
Well, because she is called Birgit, which also is a play on words, if you know, as a German, which means beer makes you stronger.
Oh.
So this has got a real cult following
in
Germany, where this retro packaging is sort of dates back to the brewery founded by an abbot in 1791, and it was sort of state-owned for 200 years. But this label's been around for 30 years.
And it is a nice, bright label. It's a pretty label.
But also,
the green,
I think
the red, the pink,
it's
and
quite
the purple.
Clubby. I think it's people in nightclubs and stuff drinking this in Germany. And it's a kind of Pilsner style lager.
It's a nice beer.
I think it's a great beer.
What's the alcohol? No, I'm obsessed by the alcohol beers. 5.5, did I see?
Mm-hmm. 5.1%. It's obviously governed by the Rheinheitsgebot, which means
that's delicious, actually.
It's very easy drinking.
Mm.
Rheinheitsgebot, just they have to make it with certain ingredients, don't they, Ben? Just
Oh, and a question for you, Ben. Have you ever had, when I was in Morocco a couple of weeks ago, I had Casablanca beer, which I really liked.
Well, I would what I would say about Casablanca beer, like all beers from hot country, not all, but the majority of the beers, we just come back from Mexico, I don't know if we mentioned that, where the beer is reflects the climate. It tastes amazing, you're absolutely parched, it's hot, and a cold lager is wonderful.
But it's quite light and
Casablanca
fresh.
You can get here, and you can get it in specialist sort of restaurants. Moroccan ones mainly.
I suggest that would be the best place for them.
And it doesn't travel as well. I mean, it's still nice, but
it's not in situ. And my husband wants to talk to you about the Foster's Revival.
Wow, is that a thing?
The Foster's Revival.
I've not heard of this.
No, I
you know Simon Chase, don't you?
I do know what he does. Now, this man is a very educated man, very nice guy, very funny guy.
Very tall guy.
Very tall. He takes Foster's and then he mixes it with the latest craft ale of choice.
So he's almost like a blend. He's diluting
he's
down.
He's taken the drinkability of a cooking lager with the complexity of a craft beer.
Wow.
Putting them
is
together.
There something in this.
And we were at a dinner party, and I've been reading The Guardian, double whammy.
Yeah.
I had some, and it was all right, yeah. Was that the revival of which
you
talked?
Well, no, I'll take that one step further. When Simon comes to ours for dinner, he'll bring his 8-pack of Foster's, and he's been insisting to Ed that it's really refreshing and a good drink, and he's basically got Ed onto Foster's, and Ed has started enjoying Foster's at home. And he wants to talk to you, but he just said, you've got to tell Ben about the Foster's Revival.
Yeah, I think that's a revival's...
That's not the word to use. He's using another word.
Renaissance.
Revisionist. A revisionist view of Foster's, maybe. Well, that's an interesting one.
I shan't be drinking it.
It was funny when we were in Mexico.
It's quite refreshing.
We were looking at the lager, I mean, like Corona, which
you wouldn't know.
Really is not a great beer.
No, we were also drinking Victoria. I enjoyed the Victoria. Yeah. We were also drinking Tecate.
I mean, there's all these Mexican lagers that are
Tecate Light. I was drinking it.
Wow, that is.
That was really, there's no flavour there. But that's the thing with Foster's,
it's
there's a bit of flavour.
The yeah, there is.
And I just don't like
it. I had
flavor,
a sip last night, actually, and I thought, ooh. That's all right.
Yeah, it's a personal thing. That's it's not that it's a flavourless.
Well, it's probably the Pinot Grigio beer, isn't it?
I'll tell you what we should do. I shall bring in over... blind tasting of the four leading...
brands.
Mid-strength lagers. I think there's one that's... I won't...
spoil the surprise.
Yeah, keep your powder dry for that.
Yeah.
But...
let's get back to the ladies.
Yes, this is delicious. So that's a tick for the German.
It's a lovely Pils, and it's just very smooth, easy drinking lager. The Germans, have we done German beer much? Have I done much?
I don't think you have. But I think the important thing there is obviously that there's a lady on the bottle.
There's a lady on the bottle.
She's not sexy in any way. She's a strong woman, double fisting, surrounded by poo.
Yeah.
And she
poo hanging from trees.
There's nothing sexy about that, is
no.
there?
No, nothing sexy.
So it's just proof, if we need it, that you can put a lady on the label without offending anyone.
Yeah.
And here is I've opened
the
can.
But do we know what the relevance is on having the lady? Why is there a lady on it?
On what the...
Yeah, that one.
Oh, she's just been on there for 30 years.
Fine.
Why not have a lady?
In Germany, it's quite traditional for women dressed
support,
like that to serve up the beers.
Yeah.
Like an Oktoberfest.
Should it just be them? I mean, should they be, you know...
Well, at least
on
she's allowed
tracks,
to get the beer in Germany. In Schwenker, they're not even allowed to go to an off-license.
They're not allowed to touch it in any way in the production process. But she would serve it up like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and she's smiling. Yeah. So she loves it.
She's got her
it.
Hands all over it. What's his other one? What's Orange Wedge?
Okay. So this is from the Bad Company, which stands for Brewing and Distilling.
Okay.
They're based in Thirsk. Great day out, Thirsk.
Where is Thirsk?
Thirsk is
near,
right,
you know,
got
Yorkshire.
Very good friend,
in York, North
Adam,
Yorkshire.
Who lived
and
in Thirsk.
We've actually drunk these beers while we were doing our show in York at the Great Yorkshire Fringe, which reminds me, 19th to 22nd of July, ladies and gentlemen, we are launching, we are debuting. They're debuting.
Surely you know that's not right.
No, I do now.
Debuting.
We're debuting at the Great Yorkshire Fringe, 19th to the 22nd of July, our new show, which is called Thinking Drinkers Pub Crawl.
Yep.
You can buy tickets right now.
Already on sale.
Which is on sale. I think they're on our website.
They're on the Great Yorkshire Fringe.
They certainly are.
Sure.
Right. So anyway, we've had these guys' beers before. They were set up by a guy who travelled around America, got inspired by what's going on there, and set up a brewery. Their most famous beer is called Dazed and Confused, which is a milk stout, which is pretty good. And on the label is a lady who is sort of sat on a chariot.
She's like a Royal Britannia.
She's Royal Britannia.
But she's got clothes on.
There's a bit of leg showing.
It's a kind of...
How would you feel about that?
Yeah, she's slightly sexy. She's clearly got quite big knockers under her dress, barefoot. Her legs aren't quite akimbo, but it's a little suggestive.
I don't think that's...
Well, I think they've tried to sort of sexy up the image of... Ooh. Britannia.
Is that the logo of Bad Company?
Yeah.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know.
I think you'd be hard pushed to be offended by that. There's no suggestion of sort of innuendo or anything. Orange Wedge.
Orange Wedge.
I don't think there's anything
chocolate orange
with that.
Stout.
And there was that MP who died during sex games with an orange in his mouth. But that was a whole orange. Yeah. It wasn't a wedge.
Okay. It was wedged in, though.
It was wedged in.
So you could call it an orange wedge.
Yeah.
It has got chocolate in.
It's a chocolate orange stout.
So is that because of the ladies?
Well, scientific tests are proving that as well as shoes, kittens and tittle-tattle, chocolate is the main thing that occupies a female brain. Most
chocolate,
of the time.
So shoes... Kittens, no way to
get kittens. And tittle-tattle.
No.
Puppies?
Chocolate, yes.
Yes, yeah. Chocolate's
shoes,
a big one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, chocolate's
the
huge.
The temperature of the room seems to be a big thing.
Maybe for women more heading towards a menopause.
Well, just generally commenting on whether a room is warm enough or cold enough.
Not really.
Criticism, general criticising of men.
This is,
seems to a good
be big,
reason
on,
for that.
Big on your agenda.
So anyway... I don't think there's anything wrong with the label, and let's see if there's anything wrong.
Well,
like
we're,
all right
we're
with
kind
the beer.
Of, we're kind of.
Are you thinking maybe it might be?
It might be pushing the boundaries. That's.
We
appreciate,
no.
ladies and gentlemen, this is a visual discussion.
Well, they can just look at online.
Yeah, yeah, we'll put it on our Thinking Drinks.
I think there's two things. I think you can be sexy and strong at the same time. So it's not a bad thing that she clearly looks strong. She's got a blinking shield.
Yeah.
Great big.
Fork thing.
Forky thing. And a helmet.
Yeah.
So she's clearly some kind of warrior.
And she's holding a beer.
Now, for someone who's got a massive crush on the latest Wonder Woman, I think strong and sexy is quite a good thing. So she's clearly not a like, oh.
I was quite surprised with that Wonder Woman. I watched that on the plane back from Mexico, ladies and gentlemen. And
did you enjoy it?
Honestly, I thought it was pretty terrible. It's a superhero film. She's not very real, is she? But I was surprised at how scantily clad she was. Given they had a chance to revise, it was quite a skimpy outfit.
Think, yeah.
But why not put her in leggings? And
or a pair of dungarees, I've been saying.
Did
dungarees
you know what? No. Wonder Woman has to have that little outfit.
Does she?
Yeah, the boots and the little... No, yeah, I'd be disappointed if she turned up in some leggings.
What a nice pair of jogging pants.
She doesn't have to have so much flesh on. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was on a plane, highly charged emotionally. It was lovely to watch her.
I've realised the key to flying recently is 3 double gins.
And a plane.
And a plane.
A
plane really helps. My husband pulls quite strong measures and we have gin and tonic at home. So I basically told myself that 3 little gins on the plane is equivalent to just a gin and tonic at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was okay.
On a plane, you normally find Gordon's Export Strength and you can find a martini, little bottles of martini. So you can actually, and this is really, I've made myself a martini
on the plane.
Because you get the ice, you can stir the ice and then you can pour it into a separate cup.
Ooh.
And it's actually a very tasty beverage. In fact, there's a guy called Eric Lawrence who runs the bar at the Savoy, the American bar. And he made everyone martinis using the ingredients
on the
trolley. And it was like a great martini.
That's
so
hilarious.
You can do that. You can do that.
On a plane. Oh, yeah. Well, that's just my.
And then just get abusive with the stewardesses and.
Yeah, get told to shut up. Yeah. I came back from Cuba one time and I drank a bottle of rum before I got on the plane. The best thing about that was I was unconscious for the whole flight.
Yeah.
It was Air France. They didn't have films.
Oh!
So it was my
that's
only.
Terrible.
It was my only way out.
The French, when are they going to stop?
Ooh la la.
Anyway, what do you think about this beer?
The beer's really tasty. Yeah. I mean, whatever
slightly
you think
chocolatey.
About the can.
Mm.
It's got orange extract in
it. It's very subtle orange, but really
not that
is.
Subtle.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's
got
not
cacao.
Like a sort of cloying.
It's got oats
sort of
in there. It's got
flavor.
A bit more mouthfeel to
it's
it.
It's quite wintry.
It's chocolatey.
It's quite a stouty, chocolatey, orangey.
That's really
good. It's quite original.
Well, if you want a chocolate orange stout, it's a good one.
Yeah. Does what it says on the can.
But it is good, actually. Really different. might be nice with a nice, like, chili with chocolate in.
No, don't say chili. Why?
Yeah, but remember we said chili was an aphrodisiac a couple of weeks ago?
Did we?
We were talking about how it apparently inflames the lips.
Of course it does, that's right.
Okay, I did bring a third, but we're not going to taste this. But this is from Belgium. No, we're not going to taste it. Okay. Just a quick one, but I was appalled because it's actually called Slag. It's got a picture of a shield on, but...
Is it from Belgium?
It is from the Slag Mulder Brewery. Mm. It's a very well-known pilsner.
You're going to have to change the name.
It was just a cheap gag.
And in Belgium, where they always have loads of waffles and cream, it's called Schlagroom.
No. Yeah.
It's
cream, Schlagroom,
whipped cream.
Schlagroom.
Schlagroom.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, it does mean different things elsewhere.
Yeah. So don't buy beers with sexist packaging, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm. But you can buy beers with women on.
Yes. It's looked perfectly right. Mm. Good. Well, I think we'll tick that PC box.
Excellent. Well done, Ben. I really enjoyed both those beers. Normally, I've got the capacity to slag at least one of them off. On this occasion, delish. Thomas, you're on now.
Yes, I've got a legend.
Legend liquor. Good one. Or was it another animal?
I wish. Tequila! Yes, as promised, ladies and gentlemen, we've been to Mexico recently, so all of my content for this and indeed the next will be in
tequila
some way related.
Related.
In fact, probably the one after as well, because we'll do tequila tasting next and then we'll go on to Mezcal. So I'll keep this going, don't you worry. If you don't like agave spirits, tough shit. I'm going to talk about more related content. This is Carlos Camarena. Here's my legend. Ben will appreciate this as well because we have met Carlos Camarena in Mexico.
Who
where
is he?
We were. He's a distiller and arguably, I would say, almost definitively, the most important distiller in the world of tequila. We were very lucky to get over to Mexico. Again, we'll give a shout out to Cask Marketing because they're the guys who organised this trip.
Full title is Cask Liquid.
Liquid Marketing, sorry. Yeah. And they took us over there and they look after Ocho Tequila, which is made by Carlos Camarena. It's a joint project. Carlos worked with a guy called Thomas Estes, who could just as easily have been my legend today, and I'm sure will be on another occasion. And Thomas and Carlos came up with an idea to make a tequila that was single estate tequila. But the reason he's in there is because he makes a whole series of tequilas, and he's very passionate about making tequila using traditional techniques. He's a third generation tequila maker, so his family traditions of making the spirit go back. The original Camarena family were making it right up until 1910, and then the Mexican Revolution brought to an end their distillery. It was destroyed during the revolution. And then his grandfather started growing and selling agave plants to other distillers. And then in 1937, he opened the La Alteña. Alteña.
It's really it's funny. A really difficult thing
La,
to say.
It's because it's La. La Alteña.
La Alteña.
Distillery in Jalisco. Region very famous for its agave plants. And then that distillery was passed to his son, Felipe. And then over time, Carlos took it on. Now, Carlos, generally speaking, people really revere him for his tequila knowledge, but also for his passion.
How old is he, do you think?
That's a very good question. I'd say in his 60s, maybe.
I'd say maybe.
He's a very good-looking man. Maybe not as old as that. In his late 50s.
He looks a bit like, who's that kind of bounder rascal character? He's got a moustache. What was his name, the actor?
Errol Flynn.
Yeah, but he does look got a bit like Errol Flynn about him.
Very good looking, very well spoken, intelligent man. Every layer of the tequila process he's tried to really keep it in its most traditional format. He's very passionate about the agave plant that's at the centre of the tequila. He's introduced the BAT program into his
fields. The what program?
Fuels,
the BAT.
The BAT program.
So the BAT naturally...
Oh, like bats.
Bats naturally pollinate the agave. There are lots of ways that agave can reproduce, but essentially what happens is over the course of its life, it uses the sun's energy to create sugars and it builds up all the energy in the bulb. It actually shuts down during the day when it's really hot, and then at night it converts all of this sun from its leaves into its energy.
Sugars.
After about 7 years, it starts to grow a big stalk, gets a stalk on. And the stalk takes about 6 to 9 months to grow, and it looks a lot like an asparagus. People think it's a cactus. The agave comes from the asparagus family, and it does look a bit like an asparagus stalk. And eventually that will flower, and when it flowers, the seeds will then pass on and another agave can grow. And What the agave farmers do is they cut that stalk off and they stop that process because they want to keep all the sugars. And once it's flowered, all the energy that it's built up, all that beautiful energy, it sort of
dissipates.
Emits through its stalk.
Surge through its stalk.
Yeah, and out it comes. They cut this off and they then plant that stalk and create another agave, but don't allow it to naturally reproduce through pollination. So as a result, the agave is a clone, and that means it's not resistant to certain pests and bacteria because it's got the same genetic makeup every time. And at the moment, as we've discussed on previous podcasts, there's an agave shortage, one that is likely to affect tequila all the way up until potentially 1921. So this is
2021.
2021, yeah. In the 20s, thanks, Ben.
Where do the bats come in?
So the bats naturally pollinate, but they've become not endangered, but rare in the Jalisco region because they don't have these plants to feed on and naturally pollinate. So Collis has bought in species of agave to plant in his field and allow them to flower. And what that means is he won't be able to use those agaves for his tequila. So he's taken on a percentage of his yield and he's just purely doing it so that the bats are encouraged back into the...
Biodiversity and getting the bats back.
Exactly.
Like,
and that's his massive passion is for the plant and the sustainability of the plant and the land. I mean, he talks about himself as a custodian of the region of the land, and what he's doing will have absolutely no impact in his lifetime, probably his son, daughters, his grandchildren. None of them will benefit. It'll probably take about 80 to 100 years for this to actually have any sort of impact on the region, for naturally pollinating and wild agave really flourishing again. But as he points out, it's essential for the Mexican people that these things are allowed to happen and that people take care of the land. He considers himself, what do you call it, agronomist? Is that right? Is that the term for somebody
who's
very passionate about the land and learns about agriculture?
Hippie.
But he's also very passionate about the people who work for him. So he's got 150 employees and he talks about them as his family. What's happened in the world of tequila is as it's become more and more commercially driven, there has been less care applied to the workforce. Some of the bigger producers are using different techniques, which are shortcutting, arguably, some of the more traditional processes. So using steam brick ovens, using Tahona stones, which are massive stones that crush the agave. Instead, they're using different types of cooking methods, diffusers, ways of extracting that sugar that's a lot quicker, needs a lot less people involved in the process. And as a result, there are less jobs. And I think that Carlos is very passionate about the people who work for him, but also for the tequila industry and what it means to the people of Mexico and has done for hundreds of years. And he wants to preserve a lot of those traditional techniques and keep
really
those people working.
There really isn't much in that particular region. You take away that as an industry. I mean, there's other things. Obviously, it's not the only industry.
And
there,
is tequila only from Mexico?
Yes.
Yeah. To be called tequila, 100% agave tequila, it has to use a blue agave. Mm. It's one of the reasons why the agave shortage is so distressing for them at the moment. And it has to grow in a very specific region. The most predominant region is Jalisco. There are other regions where you can take it from.
And where in Mexico is Jalisco?
It's near Guadalajara, so it's about an hour's drive from Guadalajara.
Where's that?
That is...
Sort of the west.
Yeah. Sort of south. So is it near Mexico City?
You fly into Mexico City and then you fly an hour west to Guadalajara.
But Mexico's shaped quite weird. It sort of curls around, doesn't it? So when you say west, it's sort of... It is, but it's sort of... down as well.
It's still quite away from the sea, so it's not that close to the sea. But it's a very hot area, and they have volcanic soil, which is why the agave grow particularly well there. He talks very passionately about tequila. It's gone through some very difficult times. Agave shortages in the past have seen the big producers drive the industry towards really bad practices, using sugarcane instead of agave juices to make the product, and he's always been very passionate about 100% agave. He uses wild yeast, only wild yeast. He's really clinging on to everything that's important about it.
So wild yeast, listeners, you can do it in wine as well. You get wild yeast or cultured yeast, and wild yeast generally is a bit of a riskier fermentation, but leaves you with a product that's more complex. So it normally means someone's concerned about quality and complexity if they use wild
yeast. So you have if you have your cultured yeast, that's like an obedient dog.
A bit more painted by numbers.
As a producer, you're controlling what it does.
Yield.
And yield.
Yeah.
And
flavour.
Whereas, the Scotch whisky industry only use a specific industrial yeast. They don't talk about yeast as being important at all. You talk to Carlos about what it gives to the flavour of his tequila, and it's crucial. Yeah. And I become very passionate about it in the world of spirits. Ben has in beer and you have in wine. Mm-hmm. Because the argument is it's got to have some impact, hasn't it, to the Scotch whisky industry. But Scotch then has the ageing process, and wood arguably has the biggest influence of all.
You know, the wood within the vats that the tequila is fermenting has got loads of critters and microflora and stuff that influence what's going on with the flavours. That's where all the magic is. I don't really...
The natural process.
I mean, the growing of the plants is interesting. It's great. I mean, it looks amazing. Mm. And the way they crush them with the horses and the tahonas. And I mean, every process of it is...
Fascinating.
It's fascinating and just really old school, isn't it? That's what's interesting.
And Carlos is sort of there as a figurehead of that. So for that reason...
He's our legend of liquor.
He is my legend of liquor. We'll raise a glass to Carlos and we'll be trying some of his tequila in the next podcast. So tune in and hear more about
it. I feel left out now. I haven't been to Mexico and checked out the whole process.
You should go and do it. It's got a thriving wine scene.
Maybe not so much. Well, thanks, boys. That brings us to the end of another episode of It's a Drink Talking.
It's been amazing.
And I shall look forward to catching up with you both next time.
Yes.
And goodbye, listeners.
Goodbye.
Cheers.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.